Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Texas Twin Abduction by Virginia Vaughn. This twin's past is a blank, and she might not have a future. Waking up in a bullet-ridden car with a bag of cash and a deputy insisting she's his ex-fiancée, Ashley Taylor has no memory of what happened, or of Lawson Avery. But with her twin missing and someone hunting her down, she must trust him with her life. Can Lawson save her and her sister, even as Ashley's forgotten secrets become an inescapable trap?
Hi, and welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I am so glad you joined me. Today, I am chatting with Virginia Vaughn. She's a multi-published author of inspirational romantic suspense. She comes from a large Southern family, and she has loved books from a young age, and I know we're going to have a lot to talk about because I can totally relate to that. And she was also a former investigator for the state of Mississippi, and I'm looking forward to talking with her about how she uses that in her books. But welcome to my show, Virginia.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So I am intrigued. Criminal justice background. I mean, is that not one of the best backgrounds to write romantic suspense?
Yeah, it does come in handy quite often, I have to say. I actually have a master's degree in criminal justice, and I did work as an investigator. So, yeah, I get to put those former skills to work doing, you know, what I love doing, which is writing romantic suspense.
I mean, I'm not sure, you don't have to tell me how many years since you were an investigator, but have a lot of things changed recently? I mean, I'm sure you still have to do a lot of research to make your books, you know, more accurate and...
I do have to do a good bit of research. I think the procedural-wise, things are so different from each jurisdiction anyway that, you know, you do have to do that research, especially if you're writing in a different part of the country, for instance. I live in the South, so, you know, there are going to be some procedural things that are different here than they are, say, you know, across, in other parts of the country. I don't think really a lot has changed, just the technology, that kind of stuff, since it's been quite a while since, I would say it's been like 10, 15 years since I worked for the state as an investigator, so.
Yeah, and do you find that do most readers kind of understand that jurisdictions have different ways of doing things? Or do you find that they kind of go, well, that couldn't be, you know, I don't know if you get comments about how that couldn't be accurate because it's not accurate where the reader is writing from?
Well, I've never gotten that kind of comment before, but I think a lot of people, if they don't know anybody that is in law enforcement, they tend to get a lot of their information off of TV, you know, about how things are. And so what you might perceive is the right way to do something, you know, from a law enforcement perspective, a reader who doesn't know that might just be going off what they know on TV. But, I mean, nobody's ever brought anything up to my attention that I, you know, something was wrong with one of my books. They might have kept it to themselves, but they never told me.
And I'd rather them keep it to yourselves, right? I mean, come on, let's not. We don't want to. Us writers, we're a little fragile. We don't always want to hear it. The negative in our books. So,
if I'm doing something glaringly wrong, then, you know, an email or something might be okay. But, yeah, I do try to do some research, and I do try to make it as accurate as possible. You know, but, you know, I am just... we're just human, so things get missed.
Well, and I think the other thing is that, you know, sometimes we do acknowledge. I always read the like the author notes or the acknowledgments because I find that I know they always slip in some interesting things in there. I know I do, and it's I think it's interesting to see, because a lot of them say, yeah, you may have found that this, yeah, I did take some poetic license with this particular thing. I know it wasn't as accurate as, you know, whoever I was talking mm-hmm. to or research did, but I needed to tweak it just a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the fun of writing. Not that we are going to make it so different, but to take a little thing and go, oh, yeah, okay, we're going to just tweak it just a tiny bit so it fits in with our story.
Yeah.
While acknowledging that, yeah, real life, maybe not so much. But again, like you said, I mean, TV, you know, was doing that all the time.
All the time. And the great thing about writing in, like, if you make up a fictional town, like, which I often do, I prefer to make up, like, a small town setting, is that you can pretty much make it however you like, you know.
Yeah.
You make the rules, so you're not really following already established protocols.
Right, yes, yeah. That is fun.
If I need my character to do something kind of off the wall, I can always justify it.
Yes, that is true. Although, some of my Google searches, I don't think I'd want anyone else to see, but I know they do.
Definitely not.
But, you know, I was researching, I don't remember, something the other day, and I'm thinking, oh, they're going to think that. And I was like, oh, well, I can't let that bother me, because I have to find it. I mean, the internet is so wonderful.
Yes.
Just that we can just find things, most things out. Although it does get a little tricky to make sure that what you're finding is accurate.
That is definitely true. That is definitely true. But, you know, you can find, like, a YouTube video for just about anything these days. And I love watching that.
I know, and it's so hard not to get sucked into those rabbit trails when you get on there. You know, I would, my current book that I'm working on, I had a rock climbing rescue, and I'm like, it's a really small part of the book, and I'm like, okay, I think I know how. I've done been rock climbing a couple of times, so I knew a little, like outdoor rock climbing, and so mm-hmm. I was like, but I did a YouTube video, so how would they rescue this kid this way? Oh, there's a YouTube video about that. Thank you,
yeah.
Mister. I don't know who you are with 300 views, but you're exactly what I needed.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I did a lot of this book. My book that's coming out in June is actually a Western themed. It's a ranch and Western theme, and it's something different than I've ever done before. And I am not a horse person, you know. I am a city girl through and through, and so I had to do quite a bit of research about, you know, living on a ranch, dealing with horses, that kind of stuff, because that was so out of my comfort zone. So, yes, I did a lot of what I did. You know, I watched a lot of YouTube videos to, you know, to try to learn. So I hopefully know what I was talking about.
Yeah, hopefully. And I think that, I mean, that's part of the fun. I feel like we become little, you know, I wouldn't say expert, because I don't want to pretend like all my online research makes me, you know, total expert.
Mm-hmm.
But we do acquire a lot of knowledge that can be
a
fun to, like,
yes,
talk about in, like, you know, parties and stuff like that. Not that anyone's going to parties when we're recording this now, but hopefully
right.
soon. Can actually talk about interesting things that we've
uncovered.
It's always
fun to talk about things that you've discovered on the internet. Fun fact.
Yes, yeah. It's it can be very fascinating just to kind of, you know, I'm sure you have some horse facts or some ranching facts that you didn't know, you know, how things work.
Right. Probably that I never would have known had I not gone in. Has I not been writing?
Yeah.
So
what has surprised you? That, I mean, this is the Texas Twin Abduction, which is out in June, is your 12th book. So what
right.
has been, you know, and I'm sure you can look back at your first one and go, what was I thinking? Because we all do that. But what, you know, on your writing journey so far, what has been the most surprising thing you've learned about writing romantic suspense?
About writing romantic
yeah,
suspense?
I mean, what's...
Well, and I'm going to talk about specifically inspirational romantic suspense, which is what I write,
mm-hmm.
which people when you say romantic suspense, they get to, I think they usually get this image of, you know, men without their shirts on sex scenes and all that. And what has surprised a lot of people, I think, is that you can have an inspirational story, a faith journey, and still have the suspense part in it. It almost seems like an oxymoron when you say Christian suspense.
Mm, yeah.
But it's really not, because we as Christians, we deal with the same things that, you know, the secular world deals with. And so that's, I think that's been the biggest surprise that people have, is that you can put those two things together and it works. You know, you can still have that good story, that good romance, that good suspense without having to have all the sex and all in it that romantic suspense is usually associated with.
Right, and I think that it is also true that you can have, you know, romance doesn't have to be about sex.
Right.
You know, because these books that we're, you know, that we write, you know, people fall in love, and they can fall in love without falling into bed. And
exactly.
I think that, and you know, honestly, I think it's harder in some ways to write that, to show their affection for each other without going, you know, full on, you know, like you said, bodice ripping kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Because I think it takes a lot more, you know, skill to write the, you know, to help your reader along and help them believe that they're falling in love and feel that tension. Because as Christians, we do have that tension when we're unmarried and we're attracted to someone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there is that tension that we have. so it's been fun to kind of, as I've thought about that as writing myself, romantic suspense, it's been interesting to kind of balance that.
It is. And one thing I love about writing the inspirational romantic suspense is because I love romantic suspense. I've been a fan of romantic suspense forever. And when I would pick up just a secular romantic suspense book, it wasn't, you know, of course I don't want the sex scenes and all that, but I can flip through that. But it was just the lack of hope in those books. You know, I remember reading a book, picking up a book and reading it, and it was like, this heroine was like, oh, I've got to pick myself up. I've got to make myself a better person. I've got to do this in order to find love. And I was like, girl, you need Jesus. So to me, that was the biggest thing that was missing for me from the secular romantic suspense books, was just that different feel for the heroines, you know, like in with inspirational romantic suspense. You know, I hope that people come out thinking, you know, well, it's not just you that has to change. You know, God can change you. God will change you and bring you, you know, the love that He has for you. And hope, and in a romance, obviously, love with the hero too. So.
Right, and I think too that I think that's what makes, like you said, you know, Christian romantic suspense, you know, so popular, is that I think people like that hope. They like to read a book where the good guys win, and you can see some of their struggle through the book.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think that's why it has become so popular.
Yeah.
Because of that hope.
Yeah. We, the world is depressing enough. And even take the whole, you know, we're recording this in early May, and the, you know, almost everyone's still on lockdown from the coronavirus pandemic and stuff. And, you know, I just think, oh, I get to write a book that's about hope.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that these characters are going to come to a fuller, you know, fuller knowledge, or come back to faith in God by the end. And also find love and, you know, resolve the conflict that has put them in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you think about that, I mean, that's a great job we have, Virginia.
It is. It's an amazing job. And I'm so blessed to be able to do it. I just, you know, I'm still pinching myself. But I get to do this, you know, for a living. So
that's wonderful. So what You talked about, as a kid in your bio, loving books. Did you ever think that you, did you want to be a writer when you were a kid?
You know, that was so far. I loved to read, but it really never occurred to me that I could write them. I always loved making up stories, but when I was growing up, that was just like, you know, that was like being a movie star or, you know, some big unattainable dream that, you know, people like me could never reach. It was just so unthinkable to me that I really didn't start thinking that I could actually write a story until I was probably in my 20s and, you know, had kids. But I always made up stories in my head.
Right.
I was always a part of my life, and so I don't know why I never thought about, I, like I said, I guess it was just, to me, it just seems like some unattainable dream. And even when I actually first started writing things down, the idea that I could do this for a living, that I could make money doing it, that, you know, I could see my books on the shelves and people would pick them up and read, was still seemed so far away for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, God is the one that made that happen. He's the one that opened those doors for me and brought me to this place where I'm now, you know, a full-time writer. So, you know, and it's such a testimony to, I think, everyone in my family who, when I, you know, when I first said, oh, I'm going to be a writer, they all kind of looked at me like, okay.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Yeah, because that was just, like I said, that was just such a, so far removed from my life at the time. You know, we didn't know people who were writers. We didn't know, you know, we were a very blue-collar kind of family, and we just had never had anybody that was a writer, that had any aspirations to be a writer. You know, I don't know where that came from, except from God, obviously, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, with your 12th book out, and I'm sure you're working on 13 and maybe beyond, then, yeah, I think
yeah.
You found your calling, Virginia.
I did. You know, it's like something that I couldn't even dream of when I was a child, and then I just, you know, it's persistence and God. Those are the two things that, you know, made it happen, was just me being persistent in my effort to put my work out there, and then God opening those doors for me at just the right time. So,
yeah, that I think, and, you know, for any of our listeners who are, you know, writers or aspiring writers, you know, I mean, it does take persistence. And,
absolutely,
you know, it helps to have, you know, family who support you, you know, but you know, but then there are some families like you, like yours, who were like, well, we don't know anything about, right, you know, it seems kind of foreign to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I
will say, you know, they were supportive, and that they you know, they were unsupportive, I guess I should
say,
but
sure.
It was just, you know, it was like they didn't really know how to support me, I think, because it was just such an odd thing. But you know, I did grow up in a family that loved to read, and so, but yeah, that persistence, that constantly pursuing that dream of mine, I think sometimes they must have wondered why I kept going. You know, all those years that it took me to get this, this publishing contract, it was just always a part of my life. You know, when my kids were growing up, I was always at my desk working on this book that, you know, they never saw published until they were practically grown.
Right. Well, but that's, I think that is a great legacy for your children, though. I mean, when we have a dream, and sometimes, you know, God changes that dream, and it's just a journey to trying to fulfill it, you know, but another times it, you know, you felt called to write. that this these were stories that, you know, and you kept working on it and pursuing it,
right.
And just like we all do, like I did, you know. And, you know, for some people it happens seemingly overnight, and for other most of us, though, it's a long slog to publication.
I would say most of the time it happens fairly slowly, but it does, you know, it can happen, and it
right.
does happen.
Yeah.
And but, you know, if you give up after the first rejection, then, you know, it won't happen for you. You have to have that persistence and that kind of a thick skin, because
mm-hmm.
you're putting your baby out there. You're putting your heart out there.
Yeah.
And even now, I'm 12 books in, and I'm still, when I see people reading my book, I'm like, almost like, oh, no, what are they going to think?
Yeah. We are such fragile creatures. We are, as writers, and because it is so personal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great way to end our show today. So thank you so much for being a part of The Romantic Side of Suspense today.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and today I've been talking with Virginia Vaughn. She is a multi-published author of inspirational romantic suspense. Her newest book is Texas Twin Abduction, From Love Inspired Suspense, and you can find how to connect with Virginia with this podcast. And I hope that you'll join me next time.
Now an excerpt from Texas Twin Abduction by Virginia Vaughn. Deputy Lawson Avery rounded a corner and spotted the abandoned vehicle. It was half on the shoulder and sticking out into the lane, a definite hazard to oncoming traffic. He switched on his lights to alert anyone rounding the curve and was about to run the license plate when he noticed something unusual. The back of the car was riddled with what looked like bullet holes. Someone had been shooting at this car. He used his radio to call in the make, model, and license plate and also mentioned the bullet holes. He didn't recognize the car, and his instincts were on high alert. They only spiked higher when, as he approached, weapon at the ready, he spotted someone slumped over the front seat. Long, dark hair covered the face, but he could see from the petite form it was a woman. He checked the back seat and saw nothing. No one else was inside, but a purse and a duffel bag sat on the floorboard.
"Ma'am?"
Nawson locked on the window and called to the woman. She was eerily still and didn't respond to him.
"Ma'am, can you hear me?"
He tried the door and found it unlocked. He touched her arm, and she let out a soft moan. She was alive.
"Ma'am, can you hear me?"
She moved, and he jerked backward. Suddenly, she sat up and glanced around. When she pushed the hair from her face, he gasped. "Ashley." He holstered his gun and knelt beside her.
"Ashley, it's Lawson. Can you hear me?"
She turned to look at him, dazed and visibly confused. There was a gash on her forehead near her hairline.
What happened?
"You tell me. Are you okay?"
She shook her head, but he thought it was more to clear it than to respond to his question. She grimaced and touched her fingers to her forehead.
"Are you hurt?"
he added. She checked herself.
"My head hurts, but otherwise I don't think so."
She looked at him. Her eyes were just as deep a green as ever, albeit clouded with puzzlement at the moment.
What did you call me?"
"I called you Ashley."
Was she having trouble hearing him? He'd heard that some head injuries could cause a ringing in the ears.
"Do I know you?"
That stung.
"Considering we used to be engaged, yeah, you know me. Lawson Avery?"
"Engaged?"
He still couldn't be sure she was hearing everything he was saying, but there was no mistaking the confusion in her expression, or the lack of recognition.
"Where am I?"
It didn't make sense that she didn't know him. They'd been a couple for years and very nearly married before she left him the day before their wedding to pursue her career in the big city. True, it had been 6 years since then, but surely that wasn't long enough for her to forget him completely. Then he remembered her sister Bree, her identical twin sister. She'd left town over 10 years ago and hadn't even returned for the wedding that wasn't. Even though they'd all grown up together, he supposed he might have changed enough in 10 years to be harder to place. Was it possible he was talking to her instead?
Bree, is that you?
She glanced at him again, still confused.
I thought you said my name was Ashley.
Understanding dawned, and he pressed her.
Don't you know your own name?
Anger flashed in her eyes.
Of course I do.
Yet he saw her mind turning over and over, looking for answers, until tears pooled in her eyes.
I don't know who I am.
Amnesia. Possibly from whatever had caused those bullet holes, or maybe from hitting her head. He used his shoulder mic to call dispatch for an ambulance before questioning her further.
Do you remember what happened? How did you get here?
Panic set in, and her breathing grew heavy.
I don't know. I can't remember.
He reached in for her hand, noticing it was still small and delicate in his.
It's okay. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
He gestured to the purse on the floorboard.
Maybe your identification is in there.
She snatched it up and dumped the contents onto the seat, grabbing for the wallet. She opened it, then handed it to him. He focused on the driver's license. Ashley Taylor, just as he'd thought. But how had she ended up in a shot-up car, stranded on the side of the road here in Cortland County? Her parents no longer lived here, and she wasn't close to anyone in town anymore. There was little reason for her to come back home for the first time in 6 years. Little reason, except him.
Stop it.
Their relationship had ended the day she'd fled town, leaving him only a handwritten note and a broken heart. She'd said she couldn't live her life in a backwater town. She wanted a big city life and someone with ambition to be more than a rancher. She'd ripped out his heart and hadn't looked back. Now she was in town again and needed his help.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.